Blog Talk Radio.
Scientists Exposed radio show, part of the Freedomizer Radio Network. Yes, we trust science. It's just scientists we don't trust. Visit madscientists.exposed for many ways to listen or call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air. Again, that number is 319-527-6208. And now, here's our lead investigator, Suzanne.
Hi, welcome to another exciting week of Mad Scientists Exposed. And, we like to discuss any fraud going on in the sciences out there, anything suspicious. You know, certainly there's a lot of fraud going on in the vaccine industry, and there's other industries, the cancer industry. They make you sicker before they make you better if you live through it, and you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And I thought, you know, I was pretty full of myself. I was, I worked for a bunch of years in the astronomy industry. I wasn't a full PhD astronomer, but I worked as a programmer for astronomers, and my title was research associate, and that was all really good. You know, we did a lot of solar astronomy. And measuring the rotation of the small magnetic fields of the sun as opposed to the large magnetic fields, which are under sunspots. And I thought, oh, this is, you know, I'm proud of myself. I came from an industry you can't possibly weaponize or defraud astronomy. There would be no motive to it. and then I watched this this NASA press conference this week, and it was beautiful press conference. All the scientists lined up. I think it was, four men astronomers and two women astronomers. In the sciences, there are more men than women. And, you know, I was totally comfortable with that. I never felt any sexism or anything like that. And they were announcing this new planetary system at the TRAPPIST-1 system, which is about 40 light years away, 39 to 40 light years away. And, the more I watch this thing, and it's all exciting that they found seven what they called Earth-like planets. And they're kind of close to the Earth in size, but that's where the similarity stopped. There was nothing else similar about them, not their rotations, not their distances from their star, anything. That their star was totally different from our star, you know, the sun. And they were just so smiling and condescending, and I just got this creepy feeling from them. And, you know, before I heard anybody else talking about it online, it didn't even occur to me that anybody else would be talking about this, that much with suspicion online. But I said to a friend of mine who watched it with me, I said, does this kind of seem kind of phony? Does this seem kind of condescending, like they're talking down to us? Because there's not a whole lot of information in this press conference. Sure, you know, they've got seven planets that are about Earth size, but they've got all these weird rotation rates. They've got all these weird yearly orbits. Their sun is so much smaller than our star. It's a red dwarf, that all of their planets, all seven of these planets, including the ones that are in the habitable zone, they're all closer to their star than Mercury is to our star. You know, our star is so much bigger, so it puts out so much more light and heat. And so our habitable zone is so much farther out. I guess I don't know if they would even count Venus and Mars as in the habitable zone, but Earth certainly is. And habitable, that's defined as where the temperatures are such that you can have the three phases of water, frozen, liquid, and gas, you know, clouds. And, you know, we have this whole water system going on the Earth that makes weather. you know, you have the oceans that are liquid, you have the clouds that are gaseous, and you have the poles that are frozen, plus the, you know, the winter seasons in the northern and southern hemispheres. And all of these contribute to the life cycle on Earth. So I just had a funny feeling about this. So I started watching, and it turns out other people had a funny feeling about it too. Now, they were all kind of smiling and handing off the questions. They were taking questions from Reddit. They had an Ask Me Anything, an AMA press conference. And the first thing that was really, really fishy, I want to bring it up here. You can go to MadScientist.exposed, and I've got links to all this stuff. And, of course, now is the time for my screen to fade on me. Let's see if I can scroll up and down. Well, the first thing was that I like to watch Secure Team 10 because he likes to, you know, follow UFO incidents, ask questions about alien possibilities on other planets. And this press conference was clearly leading us to believe there could be life out there outside the Earth, and that it could be as close as 40 light years away. And I'm thinking in the back of my head, well, didn't they just have a press conference like a couple months ago, or at least an announcement that they found an Earth-like water planet only 4 light years away at Proxima Centauri? And so, I don't know. I was like, well, what's so exciting about this? You know, the one at Proxima Centauri, of course, that's a larger planet. It's going to have a much heavier gravitational field. But if it can have the three phases of water, you know, it could be the life forms there could have well adapted, just like we have life forms on the very bottom of the ocean that, you know, most people have never seen. But, you know, they're it's so far down there that it's completely dark. The light doesn't even penetrate down there. And so these life forms live, they have these, you know, chemical reactions in their bodies like fireflies. You know, they can light their way around and see each other and find their food and all that, and some of them live very close to volcanic vents, so that's they get the heat from that. They don't need the light and warmth from the sun. But anyway, so the first thing that we find out is after they've led us to think, wow, there really could be life on that planet. This man who runs the Collective Evolution website, and I've come across that website several times. You know, in my travels on Facebook and, you know, various social media, he's got some interesting stuff. And so he submitted a question, and, you know, they did not ask it at the, even though it was voted up by however Reddit does theirs, you know, you ask a question at these things and you vote up the question. Here's the article at Collective Evolution, and he's got a screenshot. Reddit, Ask Me Anything. Collective Evolution Media asks, when is NASA going to reveal what is known about ET life? Former Defense Minister of Canada, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, and I'll find that video for you because I've seen it too, has said that there are at least 4 known extraterrestrial species. Now my screen's full. 4 known extraterrestrial species communicating with humans. He's certainly not the only high-ranking whistleblower on this topic. Paul Hellyer, the former Defense Minister of Canada, huh? So when is NASA going to address this, what these high-ranking people are saying? Thanks. So they not only didn't ask his question, the next time he tried to log into Reddit, he got this big red error message in his face. Your account has been permanently suspended from Reddit. Not just, okay, you get a timeout like Facebook does. Okay, you're timed out for 3 hours, you timed out for 3 days, you timed out for 2 weeks, or whatever it is. He's just permanently suspended from Reddit. And that's very strange. They clearly led all us horses to water, and when he tried to drink, they smashed him upside the head. And I find that very disconcerting. What does Ask Me Anything mean? You know, if his question got voted up, they were supposed to ask it. That's the first sign. They could have just said, oh, we haven't found anything yet. And so I thought, well, okay, what's going on here? You know, I loved NASA. When I was working in astronomy, we had visiting astronomers who were from NASA. I worked at the National Solar Observatory at the time. And at the time, it was part of the National Optical Astronomy Observatory. Now they've separated, at least. Legally, but we know we had NASA astronomers around, and, you know, they were doing the same work we were doing, you know, analyzing the sun, analyzing the stars, whatever, but they were, you know, the agencies trade astronomers around. And so, you know, it was no big deal. We had NASA people around. And this just seems like, you know, the normal thing. Okay, they're making this big dog and pony show, seven planets, three of which are likely habitable zones. And we're going to smack anybody that asks about what some other high-ranking people have said about it in their governments. So it just gave me a really creepy... Anyway, so then the next one to come up was this astronomer with a... Actually, it's a group of astronomers that have this YouTube channel, and they've been trying to understand these satellite data that's coming down that... we have solar wind coming from two different directions. We have a lot of extra helium. Apparently, the solar system is going through a helium bubble right now, a big helium cloud. It's bigger than the solar system, and we're passing through it. This is causing all kinds of electromagnetic storms with our poles. And, it's spiraling a lot of extra energy into our poles that goes to our core where our magnetic field is generated. And all this extra energy is heating up the core of our Earth. We have now all these extra earthquakes and volcanoes going off. We have all this molten carbon, whatever that is, recently discovered under Yellowstone. And it's all because of this extra heat feeding in through our poles and heating up the interior of Earth. Forget the climate change stuff. You know, this is just not quite right. Oh, the other thing, and I should find the link to this too, to give you all... with all this extra magnetic stuff going on, and this extra solar wind coming from a second direction, and then lithium out there, and apparently the only way to get lithium, lithium radiation, lithium signatures, lithium particles around us is the only place to get it is from what's called a brown dwarf, and a brown dwarf is It's bigger than Jupiter, but smaller than the sun, and it radiates below the visual range. So you can't see it. You can't see it with your eyeballs. It's like radiating heat and with these lithium signatures in it. And the only place to get lithium is from one of these brown dwarfs because it's these things, they don't heat up enough. There's not enough pressure. There's not enough size to actually ignite into a regular star with their fusion systems going. And you know, it's just a fascinating channel to watch. He discusses this every so often. And he just, he watched this press conference too, and so he put up a video. And what he found was he caught NASA in a bunch of lies at this press conference. You know, they're going on about, well, you know, we found all these exoplanets at TRAPPIST-1, but we can't analyze their atmospheres yet because we have the Hubble, and the James Webb Telescope hasn't been launched yet. That's going to be launched next year, and that has spectroscopy instruments for measuring, you know, the chemicals and atmospheres. And he pulls up all the documents, that, you know, everything about Hubble Telescope. It has all this spectroscopy equipment, and we've been measuring the atmospheres on exoplanetspheres and this big one around Proxima Centauri. We positively did identify that it had water on it, and now we can't do it for TRAPPIST-1 now. Maybe TRAPPIST-1 is too far away. Maybe it's too small. Maybe these planets are too small. Maybe they're, you know, but he's just right out, we've got the equipment, why aren't we using it? And, you know, we got to wait till now. They're going to wait till next year and ask this question, is there life there? Could there be life on it? And all this. And it just was kind of a funny video to watch. I mean, he says they're calling it a red dwarf, but they're what they're doing is they're introducing the term dwarf star in the same sentence with life possible into the common parlance. And I don't know if you were listening a couple of weeks ago, but we were discussing this Dr. Stephen Greer, who's got all the documentation that they actually are withholding information from us, that, you know, there's going to be this big disclosure announcement that aliens are here but they're arranging it so that they can do a false flag hoax attack and blame it on the aliens. They want to do this worldwide attack and implement, you know, the New World Order kind of thing. And so it's like, who coordinates this stuff? Who thinks of this stuff, but then have their websites and they present their documentation and, you know, really high-ranking stuff, you know, right out of, you know, whistleblowers from the deep state military-industrial complex that they've been keeping all this information secret for 50 years now, that aliens are actually visiting us, that we've actually reverse-engineered their propulsion systems, and so most of the UFOs that people are reporting around the Earth are actually driven by people, human beings, and it's just pretty bad. So I went looking around, looking for the press releases and the statistics on these TRAPPIST-1 planets, and I found, well, we had this big announcement, you know, just a few days ago about the possibility of life, just a few days ago, and they had this big, you know, dog and pony show with all these astronomers lined up answering questions. And I found an article from last May about it, just right out there. Oh, there could be three planets that are habitable around TRAPPIST-1. And, I wish I could fix this computer. Let me play you an audio. I got to find it now. In my deck here, and I just have to scroll through a few hundred audio clips to find it. But it's not NASA. This is the European Space Agency and space.com. Space.com is where I found the several month old article about TRAPPIST-1 and the possibility of life there. Oh man. Okay. Let me scroll down. Someday soon I'm going to get a really super fast computer. Then I'll know whether it's my computer or whether it's my connection. There it is. So let me adjust the volume. I'll turn it up if I have to because it was like really loud when I recorded it. And I don't want to blast you. Hit. Do you ever get these perpetually spinning, pending, buffering? Not let me hit play.
Astronomers have discovered seven Earth-sized planets orbiting a tiny nearby star. At least three of the planets could harbor oceans of water, making them possible homes for life. Just 40 light-years from Earth lies TRAPPIST-1. It's a small, dim red star known as an ultra-cool dwarf, only slightly bigger than Jupiter. In early 2016, astronomers using the small robotic TRAPPIST telescope found the first planets orbiting the star. With follow-up observations, a total of seven worlds have now been identified in the system. Astronomers discovered and learned about the planets orbiting TRAPPIST-1 by studying tiny regular dips in the star's brightness. These are caused by the planets passing in front of it and blocking some of its light. Observations were made using telescopes around the world and in space, including ESA's Very Large Telescope in Chile and NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope. The results? The discovery of an amazing rich planetary system with seven planets having similar sizes and temperatures to the Earth. And at least the innermost six are probably made of rock. Although the planets' orbits are very close to their parent star, its low energy output means that the illumination levels they receive are similar to Venus, Earth, and Mars. Climate models suggest the innermost three would be too hot for liquid water to exist on anything more than a small fraction of their surfaces. and the most distant and coolest planet is expected to be an icy world. However, three planets in the system, TRAPPIST-1e, F, and G, represent the holy grail for planet-hunting astronomers, as they orbit in the star's habitable zone. Excitingly, this could mean they harbor oceans of water on their surfaces. This new discovery makes the system a top target for future investigation. With the next generation of telescopes, such as ESO's European Extremely Large Telescope and the NASA ESA James Webb Space Telescope, astronomers could observe signs of water in the atmospheres of these planets. The presence of life also leaves unique chemical signals in a planet's atmosphere, which could possibly be detected on these nearby worlds. Dwarf stars like TRAPPIST-1 are very common in our galaxy, with most expected to host Earth-sized planets. The search for life may find success in a system just like this one.
Well, I hope you could understand that. It didn't sound all that clear to me, but if you want to hear the replay of it, you can go to space.com, or I have it embedded at madscientist.exposed. And if anyone would like to comment on this subject, because there's a whole lot of stuff going on out there right now with this investigation of alien life, please give us a call. The number is 347-324-3704, 347-324-3704. And while I clean up my screen here, I'm closing. I had too many tabs open was the problem. But at least I can get you there from here. And you see how they're clearly leading us to the idea that there might be life on these planets. There might be life on these planets. There might be life on these planets. And to ban somebody for life from Reddit for asking, is there life on these planets? It's something very strange. And so I've been watching as many videos as I can find pretty much on this Dr. Stephen Greer, who's got all these whistleblowers lined up. And he says, we can't wait for the government to do disclosure because they have whatever reasons they have for trying to keep it secret. They've been keeping it secret for 50 years, over 50 years. And so we're just going to have to find out the truth and expose it ourselves. And so he's planning this disclosure, and he's got a website, seriousdisclosure.com, where he's got all the documentation lined up that, you know, our own government, what they did is they kept this stuff secret because weaponized. And the rest of it, yes, there are really ET visitations. And he says, you can tell the ET visitations from the human impersonations by whether they're doing evil or not. All the abductions and the pregnancy stealings and the torturing, all that nonsense, all that scaring people to death, that's all our people, because what they want to do eventually is, like some people said they did for 9/11, is hoax an attack on the whole world, hoax it as if aliens were doing it. And so, you know, if these aliens are really coming here, how are they doing it? That's the biggest reason is to just announce these technologies to the world. And what he's got, this Dr. Greer, he's got scientists blowing the whistle and engineers working on it. He's planning to release this, what he calls free energy, and it's not that it's getting energy or fuel out of nothing. What it is it can't be metered. And so it's free to you because there's not a utility company that can figure out how to charge you for it. And so that's related to the technology as to how these extraterrestrial beings could be getting here. Apparently there's a lot more dimensions to the universe than length, height, width, and time. There's extra dimensions, and where they're getting this energy is they're pulling it from a fifth dimension, but not only that, they're using it to leapfrog over the speed of light in order to get here. So it's not going to take them you know, 1.5 million years to get here, or if they manage to go at the speed of light 40 years to get here, it's going to take them a much shorter time. So anyway, these supposedly, I'm not sure whether these military departments have actually retro-engineered this stepping through the interdimensions, or they've only managed to pull the free energy and the anti-gravity technology out of it. And it's all kind of related because electromagnetic fields have a gravity component. And what they're doing is, electricity, electrons, and light particles, you know, they're limited by the speed of light. Gravity is not. Gravity has an instantaneous effect across the vast eons of space. If there's a star over there, it has a gravitational effect on us here, and that effect is instantaneous. And these supposedly there's a way to leverage this instantaneous gravitational field and get them here. And there's all kinds of claims out there from high-ranking people that they have made themselves known to our military-industrial complex, that there have been incidents where they have shut down missile launches with their, you know, just by appearing over the base where it was going to launch from and somehow emitting a field that scrambled all the launch codes and they couldn't launch their missiles. So it's just kind of, it's all pretty fascinating that this might be coming out in the next couple of years. The purpose, supposedly, for launching a hoaxed alien attack on the Earth is to stampede humanity into begging a world government for protection. And they'll just roll out, their military police state as protection, and that's what they'll rule the world with. And then they'll roll out their big depopulation eugenics and, save the Earth from mankind by putting us through whatever processes they have in mind. if you have anything to, any thoughts that you'd like to talk about on this subject, if you've been following these disclosure movements, besides the Sirius disclosure movement, there's another one out that I just found last night. I like to watch We Are Change also, and he's almost better than Alex Jones sometimes. He finds real good news scoops. He's the one, I believe, that chased General Petraeus through between the buildings at the Bilderberger meeting a few months ago. You know, what was Petraeus doing there with his Bilderberger plans for world government? We'll never know because he ran away. We've got the video to show it. Anyway, the We Are Change guy, he covers a lot of political issues. And yesterday he had a video on this meeting, I believe, in Costa Rica, about this other group planning a free energy disclosure also, because, they want to end poverty in the world, and that's very honorable and lift everybody up. There shouldn't be any poverty in the world. We grow more than enough food, and it's only politics that keeps it from reaching their plates. And if we're not being sucked dry by the oil, gas, and coal industries, if we have this free energy, we can build whatever we can build, and it's clean. We won't have Fukushima meltdowns, and boy, that's a scary one too. We're finding radioactivity and deformed fish and things. Radioactive fish reaching California shores. It's massive. There's some of these scientists on YouTube are talking about huge dead zones in the Pacific. The Pacific itself could be dying, but that there are actually at these disclosure groups, they are discussing, there are ways to reverse that. I don't know if there's more than one, but the one I've heard of is this type of algae that actually eats radioactivity. So we can save the Earth without depopulating it. I do believe that there are Satanists involved. That they don't care. They'll destroy the Earth itself in order to destroy mankind. That's how hateful they are. And it's some kind of weird religion where they just feel power in killing people. And so they get this special extra thrill when they can kill a baby remotely by vaccines, and or when they can, sell abortions, and they can sell children into Pizzagate. It's this general culture, it seems like, of preying on children. And so we have a lot of mess to clean up before we join this supposed party in the sky of interdimensional beings, and they need craft to get here. It's not like they can just get here, that like they naturally live in between dimensions. They live on their own material planets and make their way here. So, excuse me. I'm going to take a commercial break here, and then we do have a caller who wants to join the conversation, and another one whose marker doesn't say he wants to join. So I'm going to presume that you just want to listen, and I'll check with you in between here. Let me turn on the commercials.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call
Hi,
it a
you
footrest because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests
is there somebody there?
Motionless placement of your feet, I found that
you're
I'm
not on the air.
Digging
I'm just
into
checking to make sure if you want to join us or not.
Of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at SerenityRug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's SerenityRug.com.
All right, as I go to hit the button, my screen buffers again. That's a shame. Only got one tab open, folks. Looks like we're only going to get one commercial break that time. So until my screen frees up, I do want to point out this week that Google started censoring science websites. One of my favorite science websites is naturalnews.com, and they have a lot of really great health information. And Google not only banned them from advertising on their advertising networks, but they completely delisted them. So if you, the viewer, the customer, the eyeballs on the screen, want to find an article on naturalnews.com, you can't use Google to do it. And one thing I like to do is if you go to Google and you type in arthritis and then cite colon your favorite website, say naturalnews.com, if you type in naturalnews.com, you get nothing. Nothing. Maybe an ad for some other site, but you get a blank screen. Now, how often do you see blank screens on Google? You know, for something as simple as arthritis. You know, you get pages and pages and pages of, if it's a large website, they have a lot of articles about arthritis. They have hundreds. You know, the total website is 140,000 articles, so you get nothing, nothing. It's just shocking, you know, that Google would do this. So if you go to DuckDuckGo, you get, like you're supposed to get, hundreds of articles from Natural News on arthritis. If you go to Yahoo, you get hundreds of articles on arthritis. If you go to Bing, you get hundreds of articles on arthritis. But if you go to Google, you get nothing. And I blogged about that a couple days ago on MadScientist.exposed, and it's just kind of shocking. So, you know, I'm not suggesting a boycott of Google, because we don't have to do a boycott. People will wake up. You know, if you're looking for health information at a specific website, it could mean life or death. I'm not going to rely on Google for anything anymore. Not a single search. I've totally deprogrammed them out of my phone, out of my browsers. You can set up so you can just type in the address bar what you're searching for and have your default search engine. And that's what I've done. I have wiped out Google as my default search all over all my devices. You know, my tablet, my phone, my screen, my desktop screen. Because this is now, it's reached a dangerous point. Suppose I wasn't looking up arthritis. Suppose I was looking up anaphylactic shock, which can kill you. It's like an asthma attack, but it's not necessarily asthma. This is dangerous now. So I'm going to totally refresh my screen, because I am just at my wit's end trying to navigate and answer phone calls. So I know you can still hear me on the phone. And I'm just going to totally shut down my browser and reopen it. switch computers. What was the program? There it goes. No, don't try to solve it. Just close it. So I'll bring it up again. I apologize, people. It was working fine until about a minute before showtime. And then it wasn't able to recover before having to sign on here. So when we get back, maybe I'll take a couple more commercials because I only got the one in before it totally froze. Okay, give me my reset here. Door session should just be one screen. There it is. Then I hope I can take my calls. Connecting, connecting, connecting. Loading, loading, loading. And I apologize. Computer that I thought was faster. Okay. I lost my callers. Oh, well. Give us a call back, please. And I'm glad to see one of my callers has reappeared on my screen, but not the one that wanted to get on the air. So I will play another commercial that I didn't get to play before, and we'll be right back.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
Are you barefooters out there looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are seven of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, the check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around Book.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
In an ever-changing world of political mayhem, raging storms, natural disasters, and growing global discontent, you want to get the real facts on how to prepare for as many situations as possible. Hi, I'm Rich Fleetwood, founder and executive director of SurvivalRing.org, one of the largest and oldest survival and preparedness websites in the world. At SurvivalRing.org, you'll find thousands of free downloads on every prepper topic known to man and many most haven't thought of. From first aid to storm and fallout shelter plans to alternative technology for when civilization seems to want to fade away, you'll find over 25,000 unique titles available for connecting the dots and preparing for anything. We have survival history, preparedness science, community safety, authentic field training and real-world experience, and more facts than you can shake a lit road flare at, especially for those dark and stormy nights. Come and see what we have, ask questions, and let me find solutions to your current worries. SurvivalRing.org, where our motto is study yesterday, prepare today, live tomorrow. Survival is a lifestyle, but you have to live it to make it. We can help you and your family exclusively at SurvivalRing.org, online since 1997.
Got a spare tire around that waist? Is your muffin top over the top? Do you binge eat uncontrollably? We are the government and we are here to help you. Here at our free FEMA weight loss camp, we have numerous ways to help you shed those unsightly, unwanted pounds. FEMA, or Fatties, Eating Mitigated, automatically has a communist-style weight loss czar that specializes in centralized weight loss planning and communal extended fasting programs to shed that fat away in no time. Skin and boned means extra tone is the motto. Just remember, there is no way you can do it on your own. We will forcefully assist you into compliance. Failure is not an option in this utopian wonderland. How fantastic! Typical workout regimes include digging ditches and restocking them with dirt, building railways and more. Get life skills while you get lean. How do you join? Simple. Recite the Constitution in a public commons or violate the Patriot Act that includes simple misdemeanors. It's really that easy to get your own fenced-in slice of Americana. Stop being a fatty. The state is your daddy.
You're listening to Mad Science Exposed. With you on the air right now, we welcome you back to our program.
Hi, so I got a little assistance there with some of the technical issues, and I'm glad that we're all back. And I still have two callers here, and I would like to bring them, I'll bring in Ed first. I recognize his number, and if the other caller would signal me, if you'd like me to bring him in, then please do signal me. Anyway, we've been talking about the NASA press conference that they just had this week, and when I watched it, I got this hinky feeling that I was being talked down to, that they weren't telling us everything, that just that it was showbiz, that it wasn't real science, and maybe this is sexist or ageist or whatever it is, but all the scientists were all about the same age, and that kind of I found strange. I found the one Caucasian scientist with the Japanese accent a little strange. It's like, I'm really curious what his life history is. But I just got this feeling that, you know, they're telling us, okay, we have these seven Earth-like planets, and that's the big word, Earth-like. And then they go through describing them. Okay, four of them are outside the habitable zone, the Goldilocks zone of their solar system. So three of them are just inside. And but they're all what's called tidal locked. They're all facing the one face towards their star all the time because they're locked by the tides between that their planet and their star. And that's just like the moon only shows one face to the Earth all the time because the Earth and the moon is tidal locked to the Earth. Supposedly someday in the future. As the moon drags on the Earth, someday, many, many, many thousands, millions of years from now, the Earth will eventually be tidal locked to the moon also. But the moon is so much smaller than the Earth that it's not going to happen anytime soon. And, you know, the life on the Earth has pretty well synced with the moon's orbit, you know, the human fertility cycle and the tides and the fish eating in the tidal pools and, you know, just everything is all life is like dependent on that moon cycle. And I don't think they're taking that into consideration, I guess, on these other planets where they find the possibility of water and atmospheres and life. But, you know, if something is tidal locked to a star, you have one face of the planet that's always facing that star, and it's going to heat up. Then you have one face of that planet that's always in night, and that's going to be really cold. So the only place that's going to have medium temperatures are going to be around the edges, like right at the twilight zone, all around the planet, where you have this perpetual sunrise and sunset, and this other side, you know, one side of the planet is perpetual sunrise, and the other side of the planet is perpetual sunset, and then where it would be noon and midnight, they're forever noon and midnight. It's just like, stopped. As far as respect of, you know, the view of your star, it's stuck. And these things also have incredibly fast orbits. So I think I heard the innermost of these planets has like a day and a half orbit, and the outermost of these seven planets is like a 21-day orbit. That's incredibly fast. And, you know, I don't think that's going to matter to anybody who lives on those planets as much as the perpetual night and day are going to matter to the life on those planets. And I suppose life is adaptable, and if there is life there, then it could happen. But I just found it just incredibly bizarre that, you know, they lead us all to think, okay, to ask the question, is there life on these planets? And then they start banning people for life from Reddit for asking, is there life on these planets? Anyway, I went to pull in my friend Ed, and I believe I hit the wrong one. So, excuse me. Well, let me see. And it just not responding. My clicks are not responding. Oh, come on. Well, he's just going to have to yell. I don't know. Oh, I wish people would give me some input here. Okay, anybody else want to call? I'll try to let you in. 347-324-3704. 347-324-3704. And, you know, my friend Ed has his own radio show on his own platform over on Blog Talk Radio. He's not part of Freedomizer, but he had a splendid time today using this same screen. And so I wish I knew what the problem would be. I think it's frozen. So I will go on discussing more of these. I've already played that one clip for you. There's this. I have this video from Secure Team 10. Secure Team 10 likes to. That's a video channel that I like to watch, and he has all these videos of UFOs that people have seen, but not only recorded on the Earth. We have video of unidentified flying objects on Mars, on the Moon, hovering around the Sun and Venus, and there's a lot of stuff out there, and it's always like at the edge of visibility. And it's made the Drudge Report several times in the last few months where there's something hovering around the International Space Station, and then it goes away, and it changes direction, so you know it's not space junk. And while you're watching it, NASA will cut the feed. So my friend that was trying to join us has actually just walked in the door. So let him have his stay here.
Very mysterious things going on. I think this is a continuation of the Academy Awards thing that we had the other day, which was a few hours after an eclipse. And I promised someone that I wouldn't mention any astrology today. This is not astrology. This is astronomy. There was an eclipse, the new moon, and what happened was just around the time of the eclipse, there was a prop failure. A prop fell over. It was something like a building or a skyscraper or something on stage, and it crushed one of these $500,000 cameras that they have, and people were scrambling to get out of the way. And then, of course, at that night at the Dolby Theater, they also had that terrible thing about mentioning the wrong movie, giving the award to La La Land, when, of course, it should be given to the other movie. So maybe that's, I'm trying to explain why. Maybe there's a glitch over here somehow. There's some weird stuff. Amazon's been down all day. It's been very difficult to just get on a website anywhere. And I called in from a little ways away from here, and it just didn't work. Usually, you know, she sees that I press number one, which means I'm ready to converse. And it just didn't happen this time. But getting back to the theme of the show, I wanted to say that I'm a little suspicious of these TRAPPIST-1's seven habitable planets, or three of them are habitable. The three planets in the habitable zone were actually discovered in between September and December of 2015. And the news came out, you know, that spring in May of 2016. And now, all of a sudden, there's all this to-do, you know, about, oh, these habitable planets. They're in the, what do they call the zone? The habitable zone. There's a better name for that. The green zone, the cherry zone, something like that. The Goldilocks zone. It's the Goldilocks zone, but I think it's more likely that there's three bears there than Goldilocks, you know. And you know what's impossible to me? It's inconceivable to me that the innermost planet would travel all the way around its star in like 1.5 days or something, isn't it? And then the next star, the next planet in 5 days, next one 90. That's almost like a death spin. What the heck could live on a planet like that? And by the way, did you say that they were tidally locked? Yeah, no. Is it worth going 40 light years? Well, and that's another thing. Some people say 38 light years, some people say 35 light years, and some people say 40 light years. So which is it? But anyway, is it worth thinking about going and visiting the place if the whole system is falling apart, or in this case, spiraling in? And by the way, this TRAPPIST-1 star is said to be probably about the size of Jupiter, maybe somewhere between the size of Jupiter and a little bigger. Bigger than a brown dwarf. How big is a brown dwarf supposed to be? There's brown dwarfs and red dwarfs. Oh, red dwarfs are hotter. Brown dwarfs, yeah, are got to be cooler and all the way down to a black dwarf. Isn't a black dwarf probably this like coal black, and it's giving forth no light and no heat. She's going to kick me off here because she thinks that she can get me back on the regular phone. Here she is. Thanks, folks.
Yeah, while he was speaking his mind there, I've been working the back end here, and it looks like I can take calls now. So, Eddie, you're on the phone line now.
Hello,
you're on the
phone
line?
There?
Okay. Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can you
hear me?
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay, let's bring in this other caller too, who's called in. He sent me a note that you've got a friend here that is into ufology. Is this?
I'm done. Yeah. I got all kinds of friends in all in around this business and stuff. What you're talking about as far as life on other planets and does life really exist out there? I got to tell you, you know, you got some of the outer rings of Saturn and stuff. And
I've heard about them.
You know, they found water, ice crystals on that stuff. So it's
on the rings
so
of Saturn?
Plausible. Yes.
I've also heard that there's a 26-mile-long UFO living there, a mothership.
Well, I don't know about the motherships. No. What I'm saying is just from past documentaries that have been done on National Geographic Channel and other scientific studies that have been done, they actually did find ice crystals comprised of water and all that. So it is plausible, along with microorganisms that do exist out there.
Yeah.
On the outer rings of Saturn, particularly on, I think it's ninth moon. And don't hold me to it, but it is possible.
That life
could exist out there, even within our own solar system.
Wow.
But yes, I do have a friend who studies ufology. I don't know. I don't credit him that much. He points a camcorder out in different directions. Any streak of light he sees, supposedly it's an intelligent life, even though it could just be a lens flare in his camera. I do believe that when you start studying scientifically what's actually happening out there, and the closer we get with space probes and all that, I believe it could actually be true. And I think that you're not too far off base. So if anybody out there thinks that there's some crazy stuff going on out there, you know, it's plausible.
We're not so unusual, huh?
We are really not the only people out there in the long run. I believe that, like, you know, once you find water and once you find, microorganisms, even in our own solar system, on outer moons of a planet, that when we're just scratching the surface on, it's possible.
I'm sorry.
There's no need to go 40 light years and take thousands of years to do it, to go to another star system when there's so many possibilities right here in the solar system.
Well, there is, just on that point alone. But you know what? 40 light years to our galaxy, to our Earth, to our world as we know it, based on our scientific advances, which are kind of primitive when you look at it. The only thing we did was, in the 1960s, go to the moon. Who's to say that there's no other sophisticated world, galaxy, or planet out there that's so far more advanced than ours? And when you look at it that way...
Have you heard why we didn't go back?
They may be so far ahead of us. I'm sorry?
Yeah, have you heard why we didn't go back? Have you heard?
Why we didn't go back to the moon?
They were there.
Why we didn't go
to the moon. Yeah, because they were there waiting for us. That's why we started going to the moon and we stopped going like 3 years later. And if you listen to Dr. Stephen Greer and pull up some of his videos, he's got a YouTube channel called Serious Disclosure. And the most recent talk that he did posted in December, he's got the whistleblowers from the military industrial complex.
I've heard about that, yeah.
And the story is, at least from his whistleblowers and his documentation, which he puts up on his website, seriousdisclosure.com, is that the UFO crash in Roswell, 1947, it wasn't a crash. We shot it down. We shot it down, and we recovered the materials, and they reverse-engineered its anti-gravity drive. And so whoever it is on the moon, it's either the original UFO people or it's our own people. And that the whole – we did go to the moon on rockets in 1969 because Kennedy had promised it before he died. And so – but by then, the rocket technology was obsolete. It was already, 20 years obsolete. It was just World War II technology rehashed to shoot us to the moon. But it's extremely dangerous to shoot people on rockets, and we've lost a lot of people just doing this, just to hide the fact that our own military has weaponized these drives. And what they're planning ultimately, to make a big weapon out of it, is they're going to, if they can't impose the police state, the worldwide police state, if they can't depose Trump and impose a worldwide police state, they're going to hoax an alien invasion with the stuff that we've built, having reverse engineered all this. And so Greer gives a very convincing talk on this because he's got the documentation and the whistleblowers backing him up. So he's planning a worldwide disclosure this year because he says, don't ask the governments, they won't do it. The people have to lead, and the government will have to follow, and because he's got all his documentation lined up. So it's just fascinating, It's just fascinating. And he says that we went to the moon, and there were ETs there already, or it was our own people, and they told Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. Now, he didn't mention Michael Collins, but he stayed up in the module. But the reason, they told them, don't ever open your mouths what you saw up there, or your families, we will dispatch of your families. And so, Neil Armstrong basically had a nervous breakdown and went into seclusion the rest of his life, and he just professorship somewhere. And Buzz Aldrin did a round with alcoholism and finally came out of it, but he didn't start really speaking till a year or two ago, where he told some people what he really saw. And it's just fascinating that it only kind of makes sense that, we're just one example of the universe is teeming with life all over the place, and they've mastered this anti-gravity stuff and this interdimensional stuff to leapfrog over light,
fascinating. I think you're right. And it's funny because I think that even within our own galaxy, we're just kind of scratching the surface of the Earth,
Yeah.
And I mean, even just finding little molecules of water and life and little frozen crustaceans or whatever they're finding up there. I mean, who's to say that, if you got a lobster on a moon in Saturn, that, there's not life somewhere else that has intelligent form?
Right. Yeah.
Even
it
beyond
makes
the galaxy
sense.
Beyond
it's
ours.
Like the natural, yeah. If he says that these, even though most of the UFOs that we see in the Earth sky are man-made, human-made, and human-piloted, that there are still some ETs that do come visit, but they don't stay long because our military still shoots at them.
I'm sure that drones are going to take on a whole other meaning. UFOs are going to take on a whole other meaning only because of everything with all the kiddie play toy drones nowadays. But hey, like you said, my friend's an amateur ufologist. He finds all kinds of things up there in the sky, sees things over the GW Bridge and whatnot. And I just want to say, listen, I enjoy your program, and I'll definitely call back in. I'm going to enjoy listening to you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Well, it's not ufology every week, although I think I did cover it a couple of weeks ago. I got into this first for exposing the fraud in the vaccine industry because they are killing babies intentionally. And it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe there's evil that big in the world, but there is. And, so the whole vaccine industry is a total fraud. And, that's what got me into it. But I'm finding fraud in other industries. And so, we've been going since, last May sometime. And usually
maybe Planned Parenthood is selling the cells and all that to the aliens.
Yeah.
And to try to do research on the human.
Well,
maybe.
That's their own people. If it's evil, if they're doing evil, it's our people. If they're not doing evil, it's the aliens, and that's the position of Dr. Greer. Now, there's some others who disagree with that. Oh, there's all these different races. There's 11 races, and 9 of them are evil, and 2 of them are benevolent, and that's the David Icke position. And they've tampered with human genetics, and so Rh negative people have alien DNA. Well, I know that's not true because my own sister is Rh negative, and we had the same parents.
What dimension they're from. See, you may have a parallel dimension where one of them may be perceived as evil and another one may not be evil but doing right based on that dimension that they're from.
There's only one good and one evil. I'm convinced that evil is evil and good is good. It's not going to be reversed in another dimension, I don't think.
It could be a matter of perception, though.
Yes.
I mean, it's like
Think
about the Twilight Zone. Think about the Twilight Zone episode where they had an extraterrestrial force come down on Earth, and they collected people to come back to this great civilization that they actually made. They wrote a book and everything about it. At the end of the episode, someone translated what this encrypted writing really was. And it was
serve
a cookbook,
man.
How to serve man. Yes. You see? You know what I'm saying there?
Exactly.
You know,
I'll tell you where they came from. That our own
they're going to come down here. They're going to come down here and eat my spleen. You know?
Our CIA mastered the anti-gravity stuff in 1954, and they hatched the idea back then. If we ever need to, we're going to launch this worldwide alien attack, and we have to make sure people are afraid of aliens. And so we're going to start permeating the culture with these stories about evil aliens attacking the Earth. And that was one of the early ones, you know, just go forward, you know, 40 years, and you have the Independence movies, where they're, you know, taking over the Earth and shooting and attacking. And, you know, it's probably a big idea.
Taking over
the
White
House
and all this.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
Probably what gave them the idea was the science fiction book War of the Worlds, you know, that they had all that radio scare in 1938, where they, you know, they wrote it up as it was it H.G. Wells or was it Jules Verne? I think it was H.G. Wells.
H.G. Wells.
Wrote the War of the Worlds. H.G. Wells. Yeah, H.G. Wells. Wrote the War of the Worlds.
Orson.
Yeah,
no,
and they wrote it up
Orson
as a radio
Welles.
Play. Orson.
Orson
Welles.
They wrote
one
it up
of
as
them's
a radio
Animal
play.
Farm, the other one's,
yeah, they wrote it up, and they scared everybody to death. They thought they were listening to news reports on the radio back in 1938. This probably is what gave them the idea about aliens attacking. I mean, you know, in the War of the Worlds, it was the Martians. They were attacking. And what finally took out the Martians was human diseases that they weren't used to. They didn't have the immunity to them. Just like when we came over to the Americas, a lot of the Native Indians, Native Americans succumbed to the diseases
that
white men brought from Europe.
Yeah.
So, boy, I'm trying to bring up the Wikipedia article on War of the Worlds, and Wikipedia must be using the Amazon.
Well, guys, listen, I love listening to your show. Keep up your good work. I love listening
to
your show.
Thank
I'm listening every week. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Wow,
all
I
right,
didn't know you were listening.
Guys,
thank you. Call more often, you know?
I listen to your show. How do you think I find the call-in number, you know? What do you think? I sit here with a colander on my head, tuning into extraterrestrial signals just to find you guys. Of course, I love you guys. Of course, I'm gonna keep listening to your show. I'm there.
Why don't you speak dialing your phone?
Long time listener. I love you guys.
Yeah. Oh wow. Thank you. Put us in speed dial in your phone. It's 347-324-3704.
There you go. Give the call out number to the audience.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air.
There.
I just tried calling that number. It's busy. Am I tying up the lines here? Am I tying up the lines? Or we got some alien interference? Anyway.
You never know.
I love you guys.
Okay. I'll call back.
Oh, believe me, I will.
Okay. So, it finally came up. War of the Worlds. It was H.G. Wells wrote the War of the Worlds in 1898. And then they made a radio play out of it in 1938 and scared the bejesus out of people.
Now, remember, where people get confused is the person who put together that Mercury Theater presentation of War of the Worlds was Orson Welles, who has no relation to H.G. Wells. But he was a genius.
How do we know?
We don't know. And he was blacklisted by William Randolph Hearst's machine, newspaper machine, and he was not able to get anything going for himself for about 20 years. If he made a movie, it was panned very badly by the Hearst machine. And Hearst had people like Hedda Hopper and, you know, others reviewing and, you know, scandalizing people and stuff like that. Well, because what happened is the first real big movie that Orson Welles made was, you caught me unawares. I can't remember.
Were they accusing him of communism or something?
No. What it was a takedown of Hearst. Hearst was pretty dirty, as what they called, yellow journalism. Geez, this is amazing, but my mind is blanked out to where I can't remember the name of it. I could Google it up pretty fast, but, you know.
Why
but anyway,
would he blacklist Orson Welles?
Because Orson Welles had made him seem like a pompous old fool, and included his romance with Marion Davies, who was an actress who was, I think, Hearst met her when she was a teenager, and took advantage of her, but then he tried to get her into the movies. He even made a film studio to get her into the movies, and he was just a mean old bastard. He really was quite mean, and he started wars. He would start with, you know, maybe that's what's going on with the newspapers.
What, just to sell newspapers?
You know, these, absolutely.
Yeah,
boy,
they want a war with Putin, like nobody's business.
Rumors. Yeah. And so anyway, the H.G. Wells was, Orson Welles was brave enough to make this movie against Hearst. Hearst never forgave him, and he made sure that he, well, of course, Hearst finally died in about 1952 or 1953. And then at that point, then Orson, you know, could come back in and make some more movies and, you know, attain some further success. And I think he was a director-producer for a while. But it was a sad chapter in his life. He went after somebody who was too big to take down. Too big to take down. Kane. The guy's name in the movie was Kane, K-A-N-E. Holy smokes, I can't even
Citizen
that,
Kane?
I can't remember the film.
Citizen
Kane, Citizen that's
Kane,
right. You got it.
Well.
You know that movie, Citizen Kane.
You know, I've never seen the whole movie. I should do that.
Sure, because it would probably be, you know, like a testament from about 1940, whenever it came out, just about 1940, 41, I think, to what's going on with the newspaper industry in America right now, with what the Washington Post and the New York Times are struggling against. Well, making up the phony news. Yeah, there's a good precedent for phony news, and that goes all the way back to Hearst. So,
wow.
Strange but true. Strange but true.
and phony press conferences with NASA. I don't know how many organizations they had to coordinate to do that press conference. It just felt so cold and condescending. Like we're all children, and they're going to bequeath us what their wisdom. You know.
My theory on that. And by the way, they all have that same phony little smile on their face. They were all just smiling politely, you know, with the audience. They were all in the same generation. They didn't look much more than millennials, you know. But what I think it was all about, Suzanne, was that every 10 or 20 years, NASA tries to come up with something so they can get money from Congress. They don't want to be excluded by Trump. They want to have some big news story going that's going to appeal to people.
But he's talking about building up the space program.
Well, that's good, but they.
So
want
I mean,
to make sure
why do they
the
have to
get spent
jump
on
hoops?
NASA? They want he could very well give some of that money to somebody else, you know, somebody who is some rogue, pioneer wants to put their own space system up or something. No, they want to make sure that money goes to NASA. I don't blame them in a way, you know. So they come up with this phony. This story reminds me of the thing about the we found this meteor that. came from Mars, you know, like a meteor bounced off of Mars.
Oh, I didn't believe that. I didn't believe that for a minute.
I didn't believe that for a minute, but yet, and yet that was, they used that to try to get money from the feds, you know. We have to investigate this. We need more money, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, I think that this is the only way that NASA can try to justify huge billion-dollar space programs is by coming up with spectacular stories like, woo, 7 planets, 3 of them habitable. Don't tell me those planets are habitable. They're spinning around there too fast, and the star is too dim. The star is it's a brown dwarf, right?
Well, they have been so close to it that they will get enough light to melt water, to melt ice. But here, what I find fascinating is they announced these 3 planets last May in 2016, and then they had this big dog and pony show just a couple of days ago in February 2017. That's what I find really strange. And here's the article, and I've linked to it from MadScientist.exposed. I have at space.com, May 2nd, 2016, Charles Q. Choi, space.com contributor. These 3 alien planets around a tiny cold star just might support life. And they've got this video. I played the audio earlier, and it sounded, I hope people could understand it. I've got the link. You can come play it at the website if you want to try playing it again, because, they're just saying how wonderful these planets are. Anyway, the article says, three potential habitable Earth-sized planets have been discovered orbiting a dim, cold, nearby star that is barely larger than Jupiter. The star is barely larger than Jupiter, researchers say. These kinds of tiny, cold stars may be places we should first look for life elsewhere in the universe, because they may be the only places where we can detect life on distant Earth-sized planets with our current technology. Study lead author Michael Gillen, an astronomer at the University of Liege, L-I-E-G-E, in Belgium, told Space.com. Now, I think this was the guy, I'm not sure why, he sounded like he had a Japanese accent. If he's living in Belgium, and he's not Japanese, he's European. Anyway, astronomers focused on a star originally named, just a string of letters and digits, that was discovered using TRAPPIST, the Transiting Planets and Planetesimals Small Telescope, a telescope in Chile. This dim, cold red star, now known as TRAPPIST-1, is located in the constellation of Aquarius, about 39 light years from Earth. In comparison, Alpha Centauri, the nearest star system, is about 4.3 light years from Earth. And they've got a link over to that video. TRAPPIST-1 planets might support life. This goes on. TRAPPIST-1 is 2,000 times less bright than the sun, a bit less than half as warm as the sun, about 1/12 the sun's mass, and less than 1/8 the sun's width, making it only slightly larger in diameter than Jupiter. TRAPPIST-1 is a type of star known as an ultra-cool dwarf that is very common in the Milky Way, making up about 15% of the stars near the sun. Scientists spotted the 3 planets by observing TRAPPIST-1 dimming at regular intervals as the worlds crossed in front of it. This is the first time that distant planets called exoplanets have been found around an ultra-cool dwarf, the researchers said. So far, the existence of such red worlds orbiting ultra-cool dwarf stars was purely theoretical, but now we have not just one lonely planet around such a faint red star, but a complete system of 3 planets. So that's the difference, I guess, between last May and now, is that there's 7 of them that are about the size of the Earth, a little bigger, a little smaller, but 3 of them live in the Goldilocks zone. But, being in and around the Goldilocks zone, why couldn't they see the other 4 before? I'm not so sure about that. These 3 planets are each only about 10% larger in diameter than the Earth. The kinds of planets we've found are very exciting from the perspective of searching for life in the universe beyond the Earth. Study co-author Adam Burgasser at the University of California, San Diego, said the statement. And they link. The 2 innermost planets are about 60 to 90 times closer to their star than the Earth to the Sun, with orbits of only 1.5 and 2.4 days long, respectively. The orbit of the 3rd planet is currently less certain, ranging from 4.5 to 73 days long. Well, that's quite a reach.
Hey,
the small
Suzanne?
Yeah.
Hey, Suzanne? Anything on those two inner planets, that would make their head spin, you know? Having to go around the
sun. Well, maybe they'd be used to it.
90. So in other words, they're only like 1 million miles away instead of like the Earth being 93 million miles away from the sun. So only 1 million miles. But and you say that the star is how much fainter than our sun? I mean, how much less light?
2,000 times fainter.
Like,
I guess that's. That's wrong. I mean, it's about half as much light, but it's about 2,000 times smaller than the.
2,000
yeah.
times
no,
smaller.
No,
but it must be more intense or something.
I found the paragraph. I'm wrong again. TRAPPIST-1 is 2,000 times less bright than the sun, a bit less than half as warm as the sun, about 1/12 the sun's mass, and less than 1/8 of the sun's width, making it only slightly larger in diameter than Jupiter. Now, I'd like to know the difference between a red dwarf and a brown dwarf.
Yeah. What a weird combination. What a weird situation. I mean, what basis do they have for thinking that, that there could be liquid seas and that life would be suitable?
Well,
you know, I don't know.
If water is really common in our solar system, then it must be really common there too. And Earth-like.
Yeah.
Well, there is something funny about that press conference. You know, they're calling these planets Earth-like, and they had these wild orbits and these wild rotations. Well, the tidal locked rotations, and you know their star is so much different from our star. You know, and it's like they're not Earth-like. They might have water. That might be nice. There might be life that found its way to survive there. But that's not a place I want to live.
Yeah,
I wouldn't call it Earth-like. You know, well, supposedly they're going to use, you know, they've dismissed the spectroscopy instruments on the Hubble, and they're going to wait. They're going to wait until we launch the Webb telescope next year, and we'll use the spectroscopy instruments on the Webb. And then we'll start figuring out if there's atmospheric conditions that would indicate that life is living there. Oxygen would indicate that. And they're going to, I saw in one of these articles, they're going to look for the possibility of an industrial life living there. So like we burn car exhaust or we burn coal plants or whatever, we radiate nuclear energy, nuclear radiation into our oceans. And they're going to look for that kind of stuff. And why didn't they use the spectrometers? Is that what they're called? Spectrometers, spectrographs. I'm sorry, spectrographs.
Yeah.
Why didn't they use those from the Hubble? And they're going to wait. It's like they're waiting. They're all lining up their ducks. They're going to do this big announcement. And if their goal is really to hoax an alien attack on the Earth by getting used to the term alien, by getting used to being afraid of them with all these hoax UFOs flying around, if that's the goal, they have to do it before Trump gets reelected because they can't suffer another election. Because he ran on the platform of an anti-world police state, an anti-world government. That was his platform. And if their intention is to implement a worldwide government, they have to do it before he's reelected, because it looks like the Democratic Party is lining up Hillary again, and she is wildly unpopular. You know, she's a criminal.
Yeah.
She's going to be in trouble by then, at least from the things I've been reading. I read other sites, too, where they line up their evidence as to what's going on with her. And if she's not in jail by the time time to launch the next campaign season, I'll eat my hat. You know, she's really crooked. You know, we should be rounding up George Soros too. But so this space.com has another article here. The universe probably has hosted many alien civilizations, and they've got these artist renderings of ET heads throughout the universe. And this is last May. This is 3 days after that the first TRAPPIST-1 announcement. Many other planets throughout the universe probably hosted intelligent life long before Earth did, a new study suggests. What are they dead now? The probability of a civilization developing on a potentially habitable alien planet would have to be less than 1 in 10 billion trillion, or 1 part in 10 to the 22nd power. For humanity to be the first technologically advanced species the cosmos has ever known. Well, so we've gone wildly from almost no chance of extraterrestrial intelligent life to, mm-hmm. gee, maybe it really is here, and we're gonna hedge our discussions on these, and we're gonna shut down the people asking about alien life in our press conferences because we're not ready to tell them yet. We're not ready to tell. So it's just, I'll put an article link to this article too. So anyway, we're fast running out of time here, and so I believe that I will have to say goodnight, and we'll find another science to question the integrity of next week. And if you have any ideas, you know, send us a note on our Facebook page, Mad Scientists Exposed Facebook page, or I've got a contact form on the madscientist.exposed website. With that, I'll say goodnight, and everybody have a great week. Oh, and tune in to Trump, too.